Mexico has a very wide folklore, spread mostly by our grandparents. Our culture has a different concept of witches from the ones in Europe or in New England. In other words, Mexican witches are terrifying.
What you're about to listen goes beyond imagination and logic. From the thing under your bed to the shadows lurking around it. This is your world melted beneath us, watching you hiding under your sheets, waiting. This is Spooky Horror.
Welcome to a new episode of Spooky Horror. First of all, I would like to apologize for last episode, since I know it was very graphic, very upsetting, and very dark. It was a very interesting topic, but it was kind of hard to talk about the killing of children and, well, of a baby. However, well, this episode will not focus on true crime, but instead it's going to be about the supernatural, it's going to be about witches. However, there are going to be some dead babies. That's something that needs to be talked about. But back to witches. First of all, there's different manifestations of brujas, which is the word for witches in Spanish. For example, they can turn into animals, we call them nahuales, and the closest term in English to a nahual would be a skinwalker. However, and although they're similar entities, they have differences, which we're gonna talk about in another episode. But back to witches. What Mexican abuelitas say about brujas is that they are wicked women who have a pact with the devil. They fly, not in brooms, but as translucent balls of fire in sizes that vary from very small to even a foot wide. They jump hill over hill, terrorizing the community surrounded by them. They fly at great speed and in different directions. It's believed that they do satanic rituals as servants of the devil in order to change their bodies into devilish animals, which, like I said, are called nahuales, or even into balls of fire so that they can seek children for food. For instance, there's an old Mexican town in Coahuila called La Biznaga. Today, some of it is abandoned, with ruins where there used to be warm houses. Despite being a peaceful town, its oldest inhabitants, who were children at the moment of this story, have never forgotten the fear that they felt during this terrible misfortune. There's different versions and no one actually knows the date, but we know it happened almost 100 years ago. It happened while the congregation was gathered at church for the night mass. They found themselves startling, terrified over a strepitous racket. They all rushed out of church to see what happened, only to find fear itself. A ball of fire, approximately 30 centimeters wide, and it had two flaming rays projected on its front. While everybody watched, it overflew the temple towards a nearby hill. As soon as it did, the ball of fire disappeared. This was momentarily, of course, since it came back around an hour later, moving around 15 feet from the congregation, who still prayed, wondering what had happened. And then, it disappeared again. This became common in the town of La Biznaga, and it is also common in other small towns all over Mexico, especially in the north. The thing is, in Mexico, that's no mystery, nor do we believe them to be aliens or comets or whatever. Seeing a ball of fire moving around like that can only mean one thing, a witch. Ever since that incident, its inhabitants had to set a curfew, so every day at 7 o'clock there was no one out, and all of them had to lock themselves inside of their own homes because as soon as the night came, this ball of fire overflew the whole town seeking for food. Did I mention? Witches feed on children. At least in most folklore, they eat kids in several ways, including Mexican culture where they feed on kids but prefer babies. Sometimes they suck their blood, sometimes they kidnap them and eat them alive. And yes, this is not proved, and most people would agree that there's no such thing as witches who can turn themselves in animals or balls of fire, but it kind of started making sense, since they noticed their babies started to have bruises and hickeys appearing all over their bodies at dawn. Turns out this woman, Doña Clara, had twin babies. While they were sleeping in their cribs, she noticed the dogs started barking aggressively and louder than usual. The next day, she noticed a bruise on one of their twins, which was very weird, just for a baby to get one bruise without noticing. That night, the dogs barked the same way all over again, desperately. This was a few weeks after the witch first appeared. Some babies had already died, but they hadn't connected the dots yet. The next day, the bruise was worse, but she didn't get why. So she stayed silent. And the witch kept appearing, lurking the villagers and the houses all night. Some children had very unnoticeable bruises, but those kept all getting worse. Doña Clara had the same issue, but then, one day after her dogs had gone quiet, she heard the baby twins crying. She realized she had forgotten to feed her babies, and when she got to the room to feed them, she found a hideous woman kneeling into one of the baby's crib, sucking his blood. So Clara screamed in shock, which was likely to scare the witch, who immediately flew over the window and was not anywhere to be seen. Doña Clara ran to help her babies, but it was too late. One of them was already dead. Since then, they started hanging different herbs on their houses, doors and windows to prevent, according to their belief, for this malicious entity to get in, as well as putting open scissors forming a cross behind the baby's cribs, some say even under their pillows. As for babies and children, if they showed bruises of any kind, their mothers started to hug them to sleep. This, of course, so that the witch couldn't suck them. While no one felt safe in the town of Viznaga, they thought they could prevent these mishappenings with their herbs and crosses, but the witch became more aggressive. Probably because she was hungry without these babies to feed on. That was a time when whole families had to take the decision to leave their homes to live farther away from the hills, abandoning La Viznaga. Even now, it is said that sometimes you can see balls of fire flying around this cursed land. And all of the lore in this story is common knowledge in here. For example, a closer date, the night of July 24, 1977. In the town of Landa de Matamoros, located in the state which I live in, Querétaro, which became national news for the same reasons, people noticed several balls of fire flying in the sky, and the next morning, five different families woke up to find their babies dead, with bruises on their necks and mouths, all with their blood entirely drained. No other explanation was ever found. And there are several sightings of this, even today. Mostly, they are seen in the furthest communities, those who have few inhabitants and lie very near hills or mountains. But this is not recent at all. If most, it has become less and less common, since it was even a big deal in different pre-Hispanic civilizations like the Aztecs. Aztecs are one of the best known civilizations that lived in Mexico, and they had a different name for a bruja or a witch. They called it Mometzcopinqui. Aztecs, like many other civilizations, were very much into magic, wizardry, and witchcraft. All witches and wizards were chosen by the gods by being born on a certain day. Those born on a day called Sequiahuitl, or One Rain, were believed to be predestined to become witches, necromancers, and tricksters. If they were born on a Ceecatl, or One Wind, it depended on their status. If they were rich, they'd become witches and nahuales. But if they were poor, and they were women, they'd become this evil witch, Mometzcopinqui. Aztecs also had the idea of duality among good and evil. Even in witchcraft, it could have healing purposes, or it could involve perjury and damage. The night would become their essence, their home, and that's Mometzcopinqui. This witch was fearsome, and it would be able to take off its legs, kind of disarticulating them, and then she wore turkey legs, wings, and beaks. Then it would ignite itself on fire. This may sound completely unreal, but it's not that far from what we believe now of Nahuales deforming into becoming animals or witches becoming balls of fire. Plus, surprisingly similar to other cultures and folklore like Europeans have, pre-Hispanic witches required blood of babies or children to feed, since it was the only thing they could eat. Then they would return to their telequili or their witch house to become human again, and then save the blood so they could feed on their later days. And the most interesting thing is that different cultures around the world have very similar beliefs. For example, in the Caribbean, they have a creature called Sucuyant, especially in Trinidad and Tobago, and even in other countries like in Las Antillas. These differences that they have are only that Sucuyants can get into houses through bars or locks, and that they take off their skin and need to put it on before the night ends. Then, with the Spanish conquest, it got mixed with their belief and their religion, adding stuff like they feed on babies because they haven't been baptized and that they have to do with the devil. Which reminds me, I'm probably making a second part of this episode because that's not the whole story with the Spanish conquest. You may probably know that, well, the Holy Inquisition and, well, turns out there's a town in Coahuila that some call the Mexican Salem. It's called Monclova and it had witch trials that are surprisingly well documented. There's a lot to it, and these trials were done in approximately 50 people, mostly women. Now, I know that's not that big of a number, but we're talking about 15% of the population of this town. I'm not talking about it because those were the kind of witches we all commonly know. Plus, it's a very sad story, and like I said, last episode I did was on a true crime mystery, and it was very hard to read and talk about it some bits. So I think this one deserves a supernatural break. And I'm also planning to do an episode on regular witchcraft, Nahuales, and another one on skinwalkers in future episodes. So I'm also aware I promised a second part of the dolls episode, which actually wasn't that much about dolls, I guess. It was more like toys in general, but that wasn't a great episode name, so dolls part 2. Anyway, I just wanted to focus on balls of fire since I don't hear about them at all, and it's such a common supernatural topic here, which brings me to scientific aspect of this topic. I think this one in specific is amazing because it just cannot be explained otherwise, at least not yet. For example, the balls of fire in science are called ball lightning, and it's described as an unexplained and dangerous atmospheric electrical phenomenon. It refers to a luminescent spherical object that varies from pea size to several meters in diameter. It has been reported that the lightning bolt sometimes explodes, leaving behind an odor of sulfur. And the existence of this phenomena has not been proven, although it appears in a variety of accounts over the centuries and civilizations. Scientists have proposed many hypotheses about ball lightning all over the centuries, but due to inconsistencies and the lack of reliable data, the true nature of ball lightning remains unknown. And then there's others who say they're meteors, but meteors don't get 20 feet close to people and move in circles or go back and forth through hills, so I would call it a highly unlikely theory. Now, I'm gonna read a Reddit story, and it's very short, but it's also quite interesting for the discussion that was afterwards. This is a story posed to us by Bryce Mack. The first paranormal experience I had was when I was about 12 years old. My cousin and I were going out for an early morning jog at about 4 a.m. When we got out of our front gate, we saw a ball of fire floating in the air. It looked like it was a solid sphere that was on fire, about half the size of a basketball. The ball of fire was traveling slowly in a straight line across the trees on the vacant lot in front of our house. What was even freakier was that all around us, our dogs and our neighbor's dogs were all howling. My cousin and I ran as fast as we could away from the ball of fire, and until this day, we still don't know what it was. Now in the comments, he says he is from the Philippines, and that in Filipino culture, it is near to the description of encantos, environmental spirits who take up human form like the nymphs and the dryads to transfer their home or body from one place to another. Then, someone commented in this culture, Native American, those are called bear walkers. I looked it up, and bear walkers are kinda like nahuales, but those become bears instead of some sort of dogs or other animals, and also manifest as balls of fire. And again, this is not a formal episode on witches yet, but we've been talking about them eating babies all this time, so the movie that best fits this episode is The Witch, a New England folktale. It is also fitting because it was directed by Robert Eggers, who recently released The Lighthouse. If you haven't watched it, you should, but I'm saving it for another episode because this one has nothing to do with the topic. So, this is obviously not about Mexican witches, but they share some of it, like living hidden in nature and, well, eating babies. The Witch is a movie from 2015, which is surprising because it's still quite fixed in my memory, but I guess that's just part of it being such a great movie. And it somehow manages to give you a sense of dread and suffocating throughout most of the movie. Which reminds me of the trailer because it says, and I quote, "It feels like we're watching something that we should not be seeing." And yes, that is pretty much how it feels watching this movie. It feels ominous and macabre, and it makes you feel like you're part of it, and also like you're haunted by something that, though it won't appear for most of the movie, is present all of its runtime. It's a psychological thriller that makes you wonder about human nature and its ways to deal with tragedy through belief, both for better and, well, mostly for worst, explaining or detailing how disbelief crumbles in the face of the unexplainable. I cannot stress this enough. Even though nothing witchy happens for most of the film, you can never relax. It's just uncomfortable to watch, and it's also hard to look away. It's like if anxiety was made a movie, including how you just feel and believe the danger is real and ominous and absolutely evil, and for most of the film, we don't actually know if it is real. In that sense, I guess it's like Candyman, but at least on Candyman we can see, well, Candyman and decide if he's a real being or if he's a hallucination. Or, for example, in the Blair Witch Project, we can see the witch present via the stuff that happens around the characters. We never see her, but, well, we know she's here. And we can't do any of that with this movie, which reminds me, I once read that the things you don't see are more horrifying than the ones that you do see. And honestly, I couldn't agree more. It also has a very slow pace, almost painfully slow, which is probably on purpose since it adds to the anxiety the whole mood of the movie includes you in, which I guess is why some people hated it. I don't know, this movie is something else. It has real quality and the effort to just terrify you without having a single jump scare. Plus, the music is absolutely unnerving, and it's also so great that you will probably leave your sanity is just going away with the whole family on screen. With that said, I concretely recommend that you watch The Witch with the guarantee that you will definitely finish it feeling uneasy and wondering if it was somehow not just a movie. Trust me, when I say it definitely feels like you shouldn't be watching it. And I don't mean that like on The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, for example, where there's so many satanic imagery and worshipping and basically just enough to make your mom uncomfortable. But this one has actually way less of it. I don't know. Just watch the trailer and you probably will understand what I'm talking about. And I'm afraid that that would be everything for this episode. So, if you have any comments or stories, remember, you can send an email to thespookyhorror@gmail.com or follow the show on social media. That's Twitter, The Spooky Horror, Instagram, Spooky Horror Show, and Facebook, Spooky Horror. Or I don't know, just use the links in the description, which is probably easier. If you're on iTunes, please review, and if you're anywhere else, Spotify, Anchor, CastBox, or any of those, please follow or subscribe to the podcast for more spooky horror. Now, I realize this was a very short episode. Basically, it has to do with, well, the story that I told you was pretty short. Very interesting, but pretty short. The Reddit story was insanely short, too. And, well, there was not that much of discussion, I guess. So, yeah, this one's probably the shortest episode that we have done yet. But consider there's a second part coming right away, which we'll tell you about the trials that I told you about. And another thing you may or may not have noticed, but I changed the picture. I changed the logo of Spooky Horror. It's pretty much the same. I just flirted a little bit with colors and the lines and stuff. Anyway, I again will try to be more active on social media. I know I haven't done it, but yeah, and it's slowly growing, but yes. And I would also like to thank everyone for listening. Well, according to the statistics, we already have 106 stable audience, I guess, so that's kind of cool. And something else, please listen to the Dolls episode. I don't know why, but half the people that usually listen to this podcast just skip that one. So, yeah. Again, please share your stories. Please follow on social media. And please rate and review on iTunes. And we'll see you next week with Witches Part 2. Or whatever I decide to call this episode.
This was an insight into a mysterious land and the stories about those who have returned. That noise you heard while home alone, the shadows in the